We're about to talk to the most tired man in all show business.
He works so hard.
Mark McKinnon, who you know you love from The Circus on Showtime, the greatest political half hour on television every week. As we've been looking at this presidential election like no other, because it's a reality show, a social movement, a revolution, and some of the best comedy I've ever seen. Mark, I got a question for you. You were in the Bush White House, the W White House, and these last couple of days here, when you know we were sitting there a week ago at the Democratic National Convention, the night of the speech by Mr. Khan, no relation, and about his son, and how could one guy change the dynamic of this election so quickly?
Well, I mean, he's kind of burst the balloon in a big way. I mean, first of all, you know, the thing that is most powerful in today's political communications is anything that's authentic. And this guy was so authentic. He had no prepared remarks, which is amazing. I mean, the last time that somebody was allowed on a convention stage without prepared remarks was Clint Eastwood. So, I mean, just the notion that they even let him on stage means that they had enormous trust in his just credibility as an individual, as a human being. And you know, I mean, this was a guy who's not a practiced public speaker, but had a powerful, powerful story to tell. Mm-hmm. And it was so compelling. I mean, I remember when we were making the show, and we had all these, you know, marquee speakers like, well, for example, we left out Joe Biden's speech, we left out Tim Kaine's speech out of our show and put in Khan's speech because it was so much more powerful than all these lifetime politicians. And even as we put that up last Sunday, we began to sense it was becoming a story, and he's become kind of a one-man swift boat against Trump. And you know, I mean, it's beyond common sense that the last thing you'd want to do politically or under any circumstances is question the father of a fallen soldier and a mother. You know, he questioned the mother's right to that she was suppressed and she wasn't allowed to speak and all this nonsense. And yeah, I this morning I gave a speech somewhere and I just looked at the last 24 hours. And Trump made more news in the last 24 hours. There were like five or six different things that in any normal political campaign, any one of those things would have dominated a week or more of the election. And this all happened in 24 hours. And it's just boggling.
Why is he not focused? Because there's a lot of bad news coming out of the Clinton camp, too. I mean, tons. There's releases. There's journalism being done here by the same sources that Donald Trump decries, that are telling stories about Hillary Clinton's involvement, the Clinton Global Initiative's involvement in a company that's actually doing work for ISIS by building camps for them. There's the $400 million in the Iranian suitcase. I mean,
I was just going to say the $400 million. There's been economic news that has been not good, that Trump should have jumped all over. All these opportunities are just missed opportunities as he is playing defense and just digging the hole deeper. And that's why, you know, if you know, another couple people left the campaign, and it just sounds like it's chaos, and that nobody around him has the ability to keep the tether on and maintain any message discipline for longer than about 5 minutes.
I want to ask you about Newt Gingrich's comments today, Mark, because he at one point was considered a VP candidate and a staunch supporter of Trump all along, even at times when it seemed like it was hard to defend everything he said. Newt was there explaining why, you know, it was the right thing to say. And he seemed to back off from that stance today, saying that he's self-destructive. And he said that he's proving himself to be more unacceptable than Hillary Clinton. Those were his words. But he did finish off the interview and one of the news networks today saying, it's not a nail in the coffin. He can reverse it, but he probably has a matter of weeks. Do you think that's true?
Well, you know, I think it says a lot when somebody that has been as close to Trump as Gingrich has been. I mean, it's hard to, you know, beyond Chris Christie, there's really no other public official with any standing besides Newt Gingrich, who has the credibility to speak on behalf of Donald Trump and has consistently, despite a lot of you know, fairly significant catastrophic sort of things that have happened in the campaign. He stood by. So the fact that, even Newt Gingrich is now saying, man, this is really in trouble. And now you have rumors about this notion, which I think are ridiculous. But when you hear people talking about, you know, maybe he'll drop out and they're going to replace him, you know, that just it just becomes kind of a death spiral and really hard to get a handle back on your news. And you've noticed that Hillary Clinton has been awfully quiet the last couple of days, which is really smart. Right. Just shut up and, you know, let the guy jump off the cliff.
Well, isn't it interesting, too? Now, Trump was supposed to speak this afternoon, did not. We're now told he's rescheduled that speech in Daytona, Florida for 6 o'clock tonight, Chicago time, 7 o'clock Eastern. And I don't know if that was a scheduling error on behalf of the media or the Trump campaign or whatever it happens to be. But think the wheels have even come off that. And Trump, you know, he does not forgive people who have turned on him or criticize him in any way. Even if he makes a mistake, he wants everybody to say, no, that wasn't a mistake. Now, Newt Gingrich, if he turns on Newt Gingrich, Newt Gingrich is a similarly temperamented individual, which is one of the reasons he had a, sort of a shorter throw than probably his intellect deserved as a political career, in terms of a political career. And I just wonder how those two titans, if they start, you know, slapping at each other, look out.
Well, the problem is he's running out of surrogates. There's not a, you know, he has so many things that require somebody to stand up and defend on the press, and he just doesn't have many people to do it. And that's a big problem because these stories are just rolling out one after the other, and Trump can't defend them all. And you need to, I mean, that's a big part of the general election campaign and the presidential campaign. You have to have surrogates out there. And Newt Gingrich was one of the big star surrogates. And if he's not there, that, you know, doesn't leave, they're dropping like flies. I mean, people are disappearing in terms of defending him. And, you know, part of the last cycle was that he, you know, refused to endorse the Speaker of the House of the Republican Party.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's a big problem.
That's huge. I mean, that's probably, you know, we talk about all this other stuff. And I wanted to get to the nuclear thing here, too, because it's pretty daunting when you hear about it. But in terms of political mechanics and Reince Priebus and the Republican National Committee, him not endorsing Paul Ryan is a ginormous issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's, you know, this is a great example of how thin-skinned Trump is and how vengeful he is. I mean, he's clearly trying to get back at Ryan for a perceived slight from months ago that is ancient history. And if he could just look at the political reality and just understand what's in his best political interests, long term, short term, and strategically for this election. You want the Speaker of the House behind you. I mean, the Speaker of the House has a lot of power. I mean, all those members of the House salute the Speaker, and the, you know, that's you know, a couple hundred people running in different districts who, you know, look up to, in some respect, most of them, vast majority of them, love Paul Ryan. And there's no political gain to do that at this point, other than to just, you know, and that it just proves that. So then it becomes a temperament issue, and I think that's the biggest problem for Trump. But through all of this, the biggest problem is that increasingly you're seeing the Democrats and Hillary Clinton saying it's a temperament problem. And then you have the nuclear thing, which you're about to bring up, and then people say, well, there you go.
Well, and this is a little scary because Joe Scarborough this morning on Morning Joe did say that he had a conversation with somebody who had a national security advisor who had a meeting with Trump a number of months ago. And Trump asked three times in a 1-hour meeting, why can't he just use nuclear? He wanted to understand why nuclear weapons aren't being used.
The Trump camp, the Trump camp has said it's absolutely not true.
Right. Paul Manafort has said it's not true. But Paul Manafort also said there's incredible coalescence in the amongst Republicans and Trump, too, in the last 24 hours. And that's obviously not true. So, I mean, but I mean, just the idea that that is coming out, that it's believable. Let's put it this way. The idea that that is conceivable and believable should worry us all.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I remember in the debate where, you know, he talked about the nuclear triad and he had no idea what that was all about. So, you know, the fact you don't understand these issues means that you don't have the judgment or character to act on them as president. And you know, so then, you know, one of the things I was doing today was I was showing the old Lyndon Johnson ad, you know, the Daisy ad, where they talked about the Johnson campaign, you know, basically said we have to raise the stakes of this election and say basically that they were worried about their supporters becoming complacent, as I bet Hillary Clinton's are, because they're not passionate about her. So they're going to, I think they're going to do the same game plan, which is to say the stakes are too high for you to stay home. You don't want to put our national security in the hands of a guy who thinks it'd be okay to use nuclear weapons.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the Daisy ad against...
Which is exactly what the Daisy ad was.
Right. And for people who look, that's on YouTube. You can look it up. That was Barry Goldwater was seen as a guy who would be dangerous, you know, would have his finger on the button. And then they, right. And it's a very, it's actually that style of ad, not dissimilar from the ad, the best ad politically.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the one with the children, don't you think?
Bernie Sanders ad this year that he ran, it became his sort of centerpiece ad in every state that he was in contest in. And it was this great, you know, with it was a Simon and Garfunkel. Song,
yeah,
and
it was
like a throwback to the
America.
60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, America. And it was a really great, 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 great ad.
Bernie Sanders had some great ads, yeah.
Yeah, and I just wonder if you're going to see that team come over to Clinton, and they will need it, and they are going to have to spend it. Although, now it's interesting that Donald Trump raised $80 million
in July, and Hillary Clinton raised $90 million, so it was a fundraising surge for him, for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting.
When you're behind the scenes, Mark, and I know you get access that none of us do, do you see that there is any control of this candidate, or is it sort of like they meet, they huddle, and they say, okay, those are our talking points, and then he just changes it all later? Or is the strategy to say, let him be Trump still? I know they said that during the primary, let him be who he is, but now I think there's an expectation that he was going to pivot and be more presidential.
I think that they understand there needs to be a pivot, and I think the family weighs in heavily. Paul Manafort has been through the drill a lot of times. He's a heavyweight. He gets it, and I'm sure they understand the need for discipline, and I'm sure they have meetings, and they draw this out, and I'm sure that Trump kind of signs off and then goes off and does what he does.
Right. He totally forgets it. You know who's been great, though?
The most disciplined. 5 minutes later, until he walks out the door.
Right. The most disciplined person in this whole thing has been Ivanka Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the most amazing part of it. I mean, she had to save the day on the whole sexual harassment question.
Right, yeah. The kids are all really impressive. Donald Trump Jr., I interviewed for our show, and he was incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
But when Eric stepped
in. You know, very articulate and. Yeah.
When Eric stepped into the sexual harassment thing, I don't think he helped his father, saying a strong, powerful woman wouldn't allow herself to be subjected to.
Yeah, no, that just reinforced the problem. Yeah.
She's like, wait a minute, I'll talk. Let me come out here.
All right. All right, well, showtime.
Yeah. Megyn Kelly responded to that with one word. She said, sigh.
I know.
I saw that.
I know. When Fox News Channel doesn't know what to do with the Republican candidate for president, right? It's sort of like, you know, Sean Hannity knows what to do. He's got one thing. He's got a plan. But now that Newt Gingrich, who's Sean Hannity's buddy, when Newt Gingrich pulls off, I wonder if Sean's going to pull off.
I wonder.
If you lose Sean Hannity, you've lost America, Donald Trump.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. And, you know, we thought August was going to be quiet. Oh, well.
All right. And you guys are on hiatus, right? Until
we are until Labor Day. We'll be back for the fall. For the fall general election campaign, which starts in earnest on Labor Day. But as we've seen in the last 24 hours, it's going to be pretty entertaining even till then.
Yeah, started in earnest Saturday morning, as far as I'm concerned. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you all.
What are we going to do?
He just
said. You're going to kick it.
Kick it hard. Thank you, sir.
Kick it hard.
All right. There he goes.